Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 36th episode of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
And I am Kayla Moria.
And we are a paranormal podcast.
Yes, we are.
How are you, Kayla? You had a big weekend.
Yeah, I'm tired. Very tired.
Yeah.
Turns out playing your tuba for 4 hours, long fucking time to play a tuba.
That is an unusually long time. Yeah.
My lips are chapped.
Oh, I
Very
bet.
Chapped.
Did you just like stop in between songs and put on chapstick and then just wipe it off? And then
no, you can't put on chapstick in between playing. It would not work.
Oh.
That sounds like a very gooey inside of a mouthpiece to me.
I don't know. I played a bass clarinet, and it was, you just wipe it off the thing.
Nope. So we played in the Twin Cities, our first Twin Cities show. It was very cool. The people there were awesome and super accommodating and super nice.
Nice.
And I think it was a very successful first show for us in the Twin Cities. Fulton was awesome to work with. They were super cool.
Awesome.
So, and I didn't have much experience with Fulton before. I mean, aside from trying a couple of their beers and knowing what wrestler is their wrestler, I didn't have much experience with them.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure I've ever been to Fulton.
Well, this is not their tap room. This was in the parking lot of their actual brewery. But still, gotta have respect for a brewery that sponsors their own wrestler. We should get Earth Rider on that. Be like, Earth Rider, sponsor a wrestler.
Oh, you can do that. Mostly because if I say sponsor a wrestler and they'll be like, what does that mean? I'll be like, I don't know.
Ask Kayla.
Said it.
But yeah, so there was that, which means I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
I am behind on my homework.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened to stinky man farts and snores all night.
Pleasant.
Yeah. But, you know, my bandmates are pretty rad. I can deal with their farts if it...
It's worth it.
It's worth it for how rad
good.
They are.
That's good.
How was your weekend?
You know, my weekend's been pretty boring. I worked on my radio show yesterday, and this whole week has been very odd. Yeah, we were supposed to do a golf event on Monday, and then we weren't able to because the weather, so it got postponed until October 4th. But it was also the last day of one of my coworkers, and we were already just a 3-person staff, and now for my full-time main job, and now we are a 2-person staff. And so my boss was super busy working on a bunch of really cool, awesome projects that are happening in the downtown community, and then I was just kind of on my own working on our new website. So I actually worked from home half of the week because when I would go into the office, I was like the only one there. And I was like, this is weird and weird. So yeah, I pretty much worked by myself all last week, which was a different kind of experience because normally I have to communicate with other people throughout the day on certain things. But there's only two of us and the other person was busy doing stuff. So I spent all week just working by myself. But it was great when I got to work from home on those days, though, because I at least then had my cat. So I had someone to talk to, and a different being to talk to.
So when you're, say, a 2-person staff, you literally mean just you and your boss.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you worked on a website.
Uh-huh.
I know this is not accurate. I know this shows how dated my brain is, but I just picture you like when people used to design their own MySpace pages with HTML and you'd be like, put it in your little brackets and stuff. That's in my head what you were doing is just working on HTML all day, but I know that's not true.
No, the program that we use that our new website is made out of, the website format is very similar to ours when we use Squarespace. So you can kind of grab things and pull them over. But there's, because it's a much bigger organization than our podcast, there's a lot more to it. And I'm trying to update all the information. Like we have a section that's about Duluth. And I was reading through it and I was like, I wonder what information I should be updating. Like, I don't know if these stats are accurate. I don't know the last time our current website was updated. It is ugly. So I'm really glad that I'm working on a new one. But that also meant that we have, because we're a member-based organization, I had to basically find all of the information for every single one of our 350-plus members and get it into a directory. So I'm like, it's a pretty extensive project. It was supposed to be done in August. Welcome to almost October. It is not done yet. So, yeah, that was mostly my week, is working on a website.
Yeah. Nice. There are worse ways to spend a week.
100%. It was very chill, at least.
I am very excited to kind of get into my story this week, because I have been waiting 4 months to tell this until finally I was like, you know what? Done.
Doing it.
Done waiting. Yeah. This is the last episode before October, before we go into Urban Legend Times, which means it would get pushed a whole nother month. I'm doing it now.
Awesome.
So I want to start.
Do it. Let's do it.
But first, we need a word from our sponsor.
All right.
Brittany, it's time for beer talk again.
I love beer talk.
This last weekend, as I mentioned, I was at an Oktoberfest, so I was feeling very seasonal right now. So tonight, I am drinking the Diamond Hands Hefeweizen.
Nice. How is it?
It's good. This is a traditional German Hefeweizen, which is a cloudy wheat beer. Super simple, like very yeasty, star of the show. Delicious. I love it so much. It makes me feel like fall.
Oh.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking one of my all-time favorites. It's what I've been drinking the last couple of weeks because it's delicious. The Superior Pale Ale, which is made with American hops and has citrus notes. It's crisp. It's clean. It's easy to drink. It's so good. So good.
You know why all Earth Rider beers are so good, right?
Why?
Because they're made with Lake Superior water. Heck, and perfect ingredients.
For the list of Earth Rider beers to find your favorites, you can head over to earthrider.beer. And we're back.
Yes. So, this story is particularly interesting to me.
Okay.
Because as we all know, I love hauntings and ghosts and spooky things. But you know what else I love that we've discussed in the past, but we don't go too far into? I love cars.
Oh, okay. I was like, demons? What? Wrestlers?
Well, I...
haunted wrestlers?
Oh my gosh, if anybody knows about a haunted wrestler, please tell me, because I would want to learn about it and cover it. But I don't know of any haunted wrestlers myself, so that's something I should look into. But that's not relevant.
I was
going to
focus.
Right now
focus,
we're talking about haunted cars.
Ooh, okay.
So today I am going to be telling everybody about James Dean's car, known as Little Bastard.
Little Bastard. Mostly yes. What I know about this is from the Supernatural episode.
Yes, it's been in a few shows, actually, I think. I know for sure it was in Supernatural because there's that scene where the guy, like, he leaves the room, and when he comes back, his friend's head is halfway through the windshield.
Yeah.
Fucking brutal.
Brutal.
Well, for our younger listeners who might not know, James Dean was a young Hollywood movie star who became famous for his portrayal of an angsty, brooding Jim Stark in the movie Rebel Without a Cause. Think, like, to relate it to now terms of, like, angsty brooding, and some people might hate me for saying this, but think, like, Robert Pattinson in Twilight. Like,
that it,
just
that...
a beautiful, beautiful man, dark and brooding. It's
that
I couldn't come up with a better one.
I know, that is a really good comparison. I couldn't think of a different one that is more relevant or as relevant as that, but it still kind of makes me sad. It kind of makes me sad.
Why does it make
Rebel
me sad?
Without a Cause. Twilight.
Fuck off. I love both of those movies. And you heard it here first. I'm admitting it.
Yeah.
I liked Twilight.
I didn't mind the first movie. The first movie was fine. I watched it multiple times. That's actually my least favorite. What? See?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, and the soundtracks are fucking bangers. I love the soundtracks.
That, you're not wrong. But, yeah. Okay, so, James Dean.
James Dean. During his career, James Dean had become interested in sports car racing, and according to many active racers at the time, he actually showed promise as a rookie driver in the few events he ran with his Porsche Speedster. Looking for a faster ride, he purchased a Porsche 550 Spyder and entered the car for its competition debut in a race event scheduled for late September of 1955 at the Salinas Airport. Sadly, James Dean's career as an actor and a race car driver was cut tragically short on September 30th of 1955 when his Spyder, named Little Bastard, was involved in a devastating collision on the way to a race. Dean was killed instantly, but Little Bastard would go on to cause considerable more trouble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The 550 Porsche Spyder has become a vital part of the James Dean legend. Many people who know little to nothing about cars but know about James Dean can still easily identify a Spyder.
Facts.
They know it as the James Dean car. What they may not actually know is that apparently the Spyder was not the actual car Dean really wanted.
Oh.
As he had become more serious about sports car racing, James Dean had decided to replace his Speedster with a faster and more challenging car.
Mm-hmm.
He had placed an order with the Colin Chapman Group in England for a new Lotus, and it was going to be delivered without an engine, and he was going to put an Offenhauser engine in the Lotus chassis. Big deal. Very exciting.
Okay.
But those take a while to show up. There was a backlog. So Dean was impatient with the long lead time it took to get the car he wanted and looked for just another kind of in-between car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how he ended up with the Spyder. He found a Porsche 550 Spyder at John von Neumann's Competition Motors and bought it because it complied with the requirements for international competition and was fully equipped for road use. He took this brand new ride to a famous Hollywood car customizer, George Barris. I'm going to use a little Britney hashtag fun fact here.
Mm-hmm.
George Barris is famous for designing the classic Batmobile, the Adam West Batmobile.
What?
And the Munster coach.
What? That is a fun fact.
While the car was in Barris's garage, the 550 got new tartan seats, the number 130 written on the hood, red stripes painted on the top of the rear fenders, and its new nickname, Little Bastard, written on the engine cover. He picked it up on September 23rd of 1955.
Oh, days. Days mm-hmm. before he died.
I do think I should point out here that while almost every article and source I use credits George Barris for the appearance of Little Bastard,
mm-hmm.
Lee Raskin, an internationally recognized expert on James Dean, Porsche historian, and author of a book titled James Dean at Speed, disagrees about this. He said, quote, Dean did not go to George Barris for any painting or striping. Dean Jeffries, who had a paint shop next to Barris, did the work. He painted Little Bastard and script across the real cowling. The red leather bucket seats and red tail stripes were original. They came that way from the factory. George Barris was not a good friend of James Dean. He barely knew him from the Rebel Without a Cause movie. Barris has embellished the entire story for over 55 years. He is a fraud who has capitalized on buying the carcass of a wreck spider after it was sold by the insurance company. See James Dean at Speed, which gives clear epilogue as to the events that took place of the ownership and the demise of the spider. Why is this important, and why did I include that very aggressive way that he feels about Barris?
Because drama is
fun. It's because Barris comes up a lot in this story.
Oh, okay.
So just keep that in mind that while most sources credit Barris, there is debate about that.
Okay.
Anyway.
I like a good, well-rounded story.
Little Bastard caused trouble from almost the moment James Dean picked it up. He took it from Barris's garage and met up with British actor and friend Alec Guinness in Los Angeles. Guinness had an ominous feeling upon seeing the Porsche and would later write in his diary, "The sports car looked sinister to me. Exhausted, hungry, feeling a little ill-tempered in spite of Dean's kindness. I heard myself saying in a voice I could hardly recognize as my own, 'Please never get in it. If you get in that car, you will be found dead in it by this time next week.'" In addition to Guinness's opinion, friend Eartha Kitt told Dean, "James, I don't like this car. It's going to kill you," while the two were out for a drive in it.
What?
Dean's girlfriend, Ursula Andress, refused to get in the car, claiming it had an evil presence. Actors Nick Adams and Dean's uncle, Charlie Nolan, felt similarly and also declined rides in the car. Even George Barris felt some intangible sense of unease about the little bastard. He has said in previous interviews, "There was something strange about that particular car. It made me uneasy. Dean was all worked up about how he was going to race it that weekend, but I couldn't get enthusiastic about it. I had crazy feelings about wanting to stop him as I watched him drive away from my shop."
Allegedly.
Yeah, you know. Perhaps Dean himself sensed something was off about it, or maybe he was just universally reacting to the...
everyone else.
...way everybody else was acting about the car. Yeah. Because just days before his death, he gave away a kitten that Liz Taylor had gifted him on the set of Giant.
Amazing. Okay.
He told a friend that he gave away the kitten because "I may go out and not come back."
That's never a very good sign.
Either way, Dean was not dissuaded from racing. He went off and set about preparing the car for the Salinas sports car races with his Porsche mechanic, Rolf Wutherich. Pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. It's W-U with an umlaut. T-H-E-R-I-C-H. So I'm pretty sure it's Wutherich.
That sounds right.
Enlisting stuntman Bill Hickman to help out, the original plan was to tow Little Bastard to the races. But Wutherich felt it would be better for Dean to get the feel of Little Bastard to help win the race and break in the engine. So on the Friday of the race, Wutherich sat next to Dean in the Spider, while Hickman followed with his station wagon and trailer, and a photographer rode with Hickman from Life magazine, and that gentleman's name was Sanford H. Ross. At a quick stop at some point, when they stopped to get refreshments, Hickman says that he told Dean he would be wise to watch his speed in the Porsche, as its low profile and silver color made it difficult to see on the highway. He noticed that while they were driving behind it.
Ah.
They continued on. Dean was speeding north on Route 466 West, and it's not like he didn't know he was speeding. The two vehicles were pulled over earlier in their trip and issued tickets by police.
Okay.
So they knew they were speeding, so they had multiple warnings here to slow down from the universe. They were driving at an estimated 85 miles per hour, which for that time was pretty damn fast, when a 23-year-old student named Donald Turnipseed, driving a Ford Tudor, decided to make a turn onto Route 41.
Okay.
The cars collided. The impact sent the Ford almost 40 feet down the road. At the impact, James Dean's left foot was crushed slash trapped between the clutch and the brake pedal.
Oh, no.
The ambulance driver, Paul Marino, testified at the official California inquest in October of 1955, and he said that a crowbar had to be used to pry the pedals apart so that James Dean could be extricated from the Porsche.
Oh, my God.
Rolf Wutherich was tossed out of the Porsche as it spiraled 360 degrees and landed unconscious on the other side of the highway. Dean, who had suffered a badly broken jaw, a shattered leg, and other internal injuries, was pronounced dead on arrival at the Paso Robles War Memorial Hospital at 6:20 p.m. that evening at the young age of 24.
Damn.
Supposedly, because Wutherich survived, so he remembers this. Supposedly, his last words were, "That guy's gotta stop. He'll see us."
Oof.
The Spider was declared a total loss by the insurance company,
mm-hmm.
but still the car was sold and would continue to cause bloodshed wherever it or parts of it went. Dr. William Eschrich, a Southern California physician and active sports car racer, had used an Offenhauser engine special in events with some success, and he had acquired a Mark IV Lotus intending to install an engine from Offenhauser in it. James Dean's car crash and the availability of the wrecked Porsche Spyder changed his plans. The chance to acquire the exotic 4-cam Porsche engine was too good to pass up, so Esrich bought the Porsche from a salvage yard in Burbank. Some articles stated that Barris purchased it and sold the engine, but others said the reverse, so we're just going to go with it this way. Esrich took the vehicle and proceeded to strip it for parts. He installed the Porsche's engine into his Lotus 4 race car and loaned the transmission and suspension parts to a fellow doctor and racer, Troy McHenry. About 11 months after Dean's death, Esrich crashed the Lotus with Dean's engine at the 1956 Pomona sports car races, surviving.
Oh, that's good.
But McHenry wasn't as lucky. His vehicle, with the other parts from Dean's car, hit a tree, and he was killed in that same race.
They were racing against each other, and they both had...
It's multiple cars in a race. So yes, they were racing against each other, but it's not like it was the two of them that crashed. It's a multi-car race.
Wow, but they both had parts, and they both crashed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And this is where the curse of the little bastard really starts to gain strength. When asked what happened when Esrich's car rolled several times after taking a curve, mm-hmm. leaving him with the serious injuries but surviving, he stated later that the vehicle just locked up on him.
Oof.
Dean's Porsche carried itself on in other ways too. Barris promised to rebuild the Spyder with the rest of the mangled parts, tires, body, that kind of work.
Yeah.
But when the mangled frame was found to be beyond recovery, Barris chose to capitalize on the car's notoriety. He sold two tires from the car and loaned the body to the Los Angeles chapter of the National Safety Council. And from 1957 to 1959, it went on this gruesome tour of car shows that they used to do, where they would basically display different wrecks,
mm-hmm.
not for just curiosity, though that was a lot of the draw for people. It was supposed to teach people why they needed to be safe while driving their vehicle.
That makes sense, because cars were relatively newish.
Supposedly, when the car was delivered to Barris's shop, it slipped off its trailer and broke both of the mechanic's legs when it landed on him.
Oh. Okay.
Supposedly, a few months later, two of the little bastard's surviving tires that Barris had sold to a young New Yorker blew out at the same time on the highway, sending the man's vehicle into a ditch. Barris said that he examined the two tire remains after the incident and couldn't establish any cause for the sudden failures. For not car people, when you see a tire that's had a blowout, oftentimes you can see when there's something that might indicate why they blew out.
Oh.
Punctures, or even from driving on low tire pressure,
mm-hmm.
you can sometimes see an inner wear. He didn't see anything that would, from this, cause tires to blow out. There are other confirmed stories of little bastard's post-accident life. The car is said to have fallen from its display while on show in Sacramento, breaking the hip of a bystander. Another time, while traveling with Little Bastard's crushed remains near Salinas, the truck transporting it was involved in a serious accident that saw the driver, George Barkas, ejected from the cab. Though injured, Barkas initially survived, and then, as if that wasn't tragic enough, the Porsche body suddenly rolled off the flatbed and landed onto Barkas, crushing him to death.
No.
Allegedly, two instances occurred in which souvenir seekers were injured trying to steal parts off of it.
Oh, that's their own fault.
While it was stored at Barris's shop, the first involved a young man who was attempting to steal the steering wheel. He received a gash on his arm down to the bone on a piece of the wrecked car's jagged metal. The second instance seriously hurt a thief who was trying to steal Dean's blood-stained driver's seat from the Porsche.
Oh.
Didn't find specifics as to how they were hurt. But supposedly they were seriously hurt.
Hmm.
In Oakland, California, the little bastard suddenly broke into two separate pieces while again being transported and fell on the freeway, causing a serious traffic accident before the pieces could be removed. In 1958, a transport truck was parked on a hill and smashed the windshield of a car behind it when the brakes gave out. And finally, the Porsche is rumored to have disappeared from a sealed boxcar in 1960 while en route from Miami to Los Angeles. Some believe that Barris, ever the showman, fabricated that story as a way of keeping the car's mystique alive. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention. In March of 1959, before it disappeared, while it was in storage in Fresno, the car caught fire.
The frame of the car?
Uh-huh. And nobody knows
how
or why. And it suffered remarkably little damage. It had two melted tires and some singed paint. And fortunately, the fire didn't spread to other vehicles in storage, I guess. But nobody knows how or why that happened.
The frame of the car caught fire, but had very little damage.
Yeah.
What? Okay.
So, yes. Forgot to mention that, but it's still pretty fucking weird.
Super fucking weird.
In 1960, while being transported from Miami to Los Angeles, like I said, it disappeared, never to be seen again. Save for the restored passenger side door that Barris kept, despite a $1 million reward offered from the Volo Auto Museum in Illinois for the return of the car, so long as it was verified by Barris that it was indeed the car.
Right.
That was offered in 2005 and still valid today, supposedly. Little Bastard's whereabouts remain unknown.
Is Barris still alive?
With Barris himself now gone, he died in November of 2015, and no sign of the car for 60 years, the end of Little Bastard's haunting story may never be fully revealed.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to verify. Remember Lee Raskin, the author and Porsche expert I mentioned before?
Yeah, the one who doesn't like Barris.
Now is a good time to mention his last little tidbit on this. He said, George Barris was not accurate, nor was he truthful with respect to how he came about owning the spider's remains. The events that caused the mysterious injuries and deaths, and what actually happened to the spider's disappearance, are not true. George Barris has used James Dean and his death to capitalize for his own self-gratification and financial gain. He will not challenge me. I also stand corrected on the statements I made 18 years ago through continued research and writings. I believe the spider's remains, the body shell, were disposed of by George Barris personally, and the car was not stolen or lost in 1960. So, most people accept that this is a mysterious disappearance. Raskin thinks that this was Barris trying to, like, keep the mystery alive and just get rid of the car.
Yeah.
On the 60th anniversary of Dean's death, on September 30th of 2015, a man claiming to know the whereabouts of the Little Bastard came forward. He claimed that he saw his father and some other men hide the car behind a false wall in a building in Washington when he was 6 years old. The man will not reveal the location of the building until he receives a portion of the reward currently being offered by the Volo Automotive Museum in Illinois. He has, however, allegedly passed a polygraph test and has even volunteered some details about the car that check out, but he's not willing to give all of the information.
Because he doesn't own the building. Is that it?
I don't know.
Okay.
It didn't say that. He just says he knows where it is.
Okay. I don't know if it was from the Supernatural episode, but I remember hearing something about why he's insistent upon getting part of it is because he has no ownership of the building itself. And so he's concerned that if he just tells them where it is, then whoever actually owns the property will get all the money, whereas he wants some sort of a finder's fee for it. I don't know where I know that from.
That didn't get mentioned in the Supernatural episode. I just rewatched the episode.
Where did I hear that? I don't know.
I'm almost sure. Like, I rewatched it like a month ago.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard it. I'm pretty sure they didn't mention it. But
the most recent information I was able to find out was from an article from May of this year. Almost 65 years after Dean's death, a key component of his Porsche was found in a sealed wooden crate in Massachusetts, and it was reportedly up for public sale. While it was unclear how the complete transaxle assembly got there, it has been verified by Porsche to have come from the chassis number 550-0055, or the VIN of James Dean's 550 Spider. This rare piece of automotive history is now up for auction on Bring a Trailer, was what the article said. It has been purchased. It went for over $400,000.
Wow.
It is installed on a rolling steel display and is accompanied by a letter of verification and case of file folders containing additional documents. So they have that verification all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if maybe they should be making everybody sign a release that just says, don't install this into anything.
Please, let's just not.
Lock this up.
Yeah.
So basically, this famous car killed a famous man, killed more famous and not famous people, and it's either mysteriously disappeared or somebody was like, peace out, bye, we're done with you now.
Wow.
So that's the story of Little Bastard, James Dean's haunted car.
That is, like, the perfect story for you. Haunted car. I get it.
I love it. I could have gone into more detail on some of this. I did take it down a little bit because I was reading off a lot of very heavy car stuff.
Yeah.
And I realized that some people might not find that interesting. Like, I know you would have gotten bored.
It's not that I would have found it boring. It's just that I wouldn't have understood. Okay, so the writer guy who doesn't like, is it Barrister?
Lee Raskin, the author and Porsche expert, does not like George Barris, the self-proclaimed king of customs in Hollywood.
Okay, I also don't like George Barris. I just don't like him. He sounds like he was just the worst.
Douchey?
Yeah, super douchey. Thank you. Douchey. That is the...
Yeah, he does sound douchey.
That is the word I was looking for. I would more agree with the other man whose name you just told me that I already cannot remember.
Lee Raskin.
Okay, so in Lee Raskin's writing, even though he doesn't believe that George Barris obtained Little Bastard in the ways that he said he did, does he accept and acknowledge the accidents as being related to Little Bastard, or is he also disputing that?
You know, I don't know. It sounds to me like he's fairly suspect of the whole thing.
Right.
He thinks this whole thing has been drummed up and made bigger than it is.
Because of Barris.
But I did not read the book.
Okay.
These quotes were pulled from a couple of articles that I found.
Okay.
From Raskin. I like cars and I like James Dean, but I'm not going to
read a book about
read a car about Porsche. I don't like cars that much, people.
Well,
leave that up to like my coworker Taylor, who's like super into this. He is all about this, but not for me.
All right, have additional homework for you. Ask Taylor if they have read this, and then you let me know.
We'll see if I remember to do that.
Okay. Because you need more homework right now.
Yeah, let's add on more stuff to my plate here.
Yeah.
The general idea, from what I understand, is that he thinks Barris drummed the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every time in his quotes when he says mysterious, there's quotes around mysterious.
Right.
So I don't think he buys it.
Okay.
And Barris is a douchebag. I mean, he's still capitalizing on a person's death with this. But one could also argue that that's what we do when we talk about things like this.
No. He sold individual tires because a quote-unquote friend of his died in the car it came from. Very different. Very different.
Either way, I may not like him, but I do like the Munster coach, so.
No, that's awesome. I did not know that. So, and Batman. Batmobile?
And Batman.
Yeah.
On a skeptic scale of para to normal, para being 5, normal being 1, what are you giving Little Bastard?
I am going to give it a 2.5.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 4.
Oh, shit. Okay. Just opposite of what we've been doing lately.
I can see why you would give it a lower rating because you straight up said that you're going with Raskin's thought process.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. Personally, if there's these cases where these people were hurt,
mm-hmm.
it just seems too coincidental to me.
No, I totally agree with that. But I also kind of feel like Barris would find these stories and then decide that that's what the story behind it was. That he would know cars. He'd know that apart from James Dean's car would have fit in that car, and then he would have just, like, elaborated the story. Basically, I just don't like Barris. It's not that I don't believe that the story has happened. I feel like his association with it makes it seem less credible, even though I'm not saying that those things didn't happen because of Little Bastard and the curse.
But even if you don't go with Barris's other stories,
mm-hmm.
if you go with James Dean passed away
mm-hmm.
in a tragic accident. Another man passed away with the chassis and suspension components. And then another person got into a horrible wreck and obtained serious injuries with the engine. And two tires blew out at the same time for supposedly no other reason. Those are documented things. Those aren't even allegedlies. So I think off of that enough, I would still give it a pretty high rating. I would still be like, yeah, don't fucking touch any parts from that car.
I mean, no, don't install those parts. Don't drive around in a car that has those parts. All right, you've convinced me. I'm bumping up my 2.5 to 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little haggling. Also, just another fun fact, because this is full of fun facts. The engine that they put in the Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a Porsche engine in a Lotus, means that they called the car a POTUS. I just thought it was funny.
That is funny.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear about what you've got for me this week. Before that happens, though, we should get another word in from Earthrider.
Let's do it. Best time at Earthrider on Friday. It was ladies' night of the Ides of September, and it was so great. I love events at Earthrider. I just love their setup.
Well, I agree. I'm a little sad I'm missing out on this next big one because it's gonna be fucking baller.
Heck yeah.
We're talking about the Earthrider October Festival. It's going to happen on October 9th. That's a Saturday. Starts at 5 and goes until 10. It's going to feature the Poke Aerobics, who I love, Robot Rickshaw, who I love, and Winzigerhosen, Without Me, who I love. The boys are amazing. Filled with awesome music, keg toss, other games. You're really not going to want to miss this event.
Love it. For more information about their upcoming events, you can follow them on social media at Earthrider Beer on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And we're back.
Yeah. So I think it's so funny that your story had so much conversation about the show Supernatural, because I literally picked my story because of the show Supernatural.
Nice.
So
this is our Supernatural episode.
Yeah. We just did like a really cute thing, but you guys can't see it because this is a podcast.
Yeah. Oops.
So in the show Supernatural, Sam and Dean are from Lawrence, Kansas. So yes. I went on a mission to see if there were any spooky things in Lawrence, Kansas. And there is.
Okay.
They have
okay.
the Eldridge Hotel. And at first I was like, I don't know, is Kansas part of the Midwest? Because I don't remember.
We established this. We've done a Kansas story before.
And
we decided that we didn't give a fuck.
Well, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS.gov, Kansas is in the Midwest.
All right.
That was the website that I saw it on, was the government. So seems pretty legit.
So it is legit. A .gov is always a valid source in educational papers.
I'm saying, so Kansas is in the Midwest, according to the U.S. government, and it seems like something that they would know. So, yeah, I'm going to tell you a story of the Eldridge Hotel in Lawrence, Kansas.
Let's get it.
Get it. All right, so before we even get to Kansas, our story actually starts in Boston with the New England Immigrant Aid Company, which was founded by activist Eli Thayer. And so Eli created the New England Immigrant Aid Company after the 33rd U.S. Congress passed, and then the President Franklin Pierce signed into law the Kansas-Nebraska Act. So the Kansas-Nebraska Act was a bill that was intended to open up new lands to development and facilitate the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad, but it also essentially undid the Missouri Compromise, which was, after some very quick research, I believe, legislation that basically was an agreement that was made between the northern anti-slavery states and the southern pro-slavery states that said that Missouri would be a slave state and that the newly formed state of Maine would be a free state, and that the other states above Missouri that were acquired in the Louisiana Purchase would also be anti-slavery states. That's what I think anyway. I guess I don't fully know. I don't remember being taught this in school. This is what I gather based upon my Wikipedia readings. It's probably something, though, we should fix in our educational system. Let's learn more.
I was taught about this in school. I know that I was, because it sounds familiar. Now, granted, high school was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I don't remember all the details, but I think some schools teach it. I imagine it's in some of the history books, but it is probably an extremely whitewashed version of it. So
it usually is.
Who knows what to go with there?
Anyway, when the Kansas-Nebraska Act became law, essentially there was a huge dispute over what Kansas would become, because the Missouri Compromise originally said that it was anti-slave.
Mm-hmm.
Slavery, anti-slavery. But now there was, will it be a free state or will it be a slave state? Well, what the New England Immigrant Aid Company did was essentially bring a whole wave of anti-slavery immigrants to the Kansas Territory and tried to tip the scales in favor of the anti-slavery movement. So they created a temporary way station in 1855 called the Free State Hotel, which is where all of the new Kansas residents would, like, chill out until their proper, like, homes were set up and shit in an effort to make Kansas a free state. On May 21st, 1856, a Douglas County sheriff named Samuel J. Jones and his posse of racist friends rolled on into Kansas and burnt down the Free State Hotel.
Okay.
And this is why we can't have nice things. So, yeah. The burning of the Free State Hotel was part of something known as the Sack of Lawrence, which was basically where this racist posse came in and ransacked and attacked the town of Lawrence, because the entire town had essentially been founded as an anti-slavery tipping point in the battle to allow Kansas to be a free state. And the racists were like, nah-uh. But after the Free State Hotel was destroyed, an anti-slavery individual named Colonel Shalar Eldridge was like, yaha, and he rebuilt the hotel, calling it the Aldridge House. And then everything was super great and wonderful. Just kidding, it wasn't.
There were never any problems, ever.
Never, ever again. So
the end of the story.
Yeah, that was it. There actually aren't any ghosts in this episode. Sorry. This was just a quick history lesson, because I didn't learn about it in school, and I thought y'all would want to know. No, just kidding. There were a lot of things that happened. Basically, a lot of stuff happened back and forth between the anti-slavery and the pro-slavery residents of the entire area. And then in 1863, another posse of racist thugs led by Confederate leader William Quantrill once again burned the hotel to the ground along with the rest of the city.
Jesus Christ.
And this was known as Quantrill's Raid or the Lawrence Massacre because by the end of it, around 150 men and boys had been killed.
Oh my God.
But.
Fucking. Fuck. Fuck.
Yeah. All because.
Don't have a more articulate way to say that.
I know. All because they just wanted to not have slavery. Cool. But this did not get good old Colonel Eldridge down, and he built another hotel, which was eventually finished by someone else named George Dietzler in 1866, and this is actually the structure that still exists today. From then until now, the hotel has been revamped. It closed for a little while in the 1960s. It was turned into an apartment complex, turned back into a hotel, revamped again, and then in 2004, renovated and restored back to its original 1920s revamp. So now we're in modern times, and I have some ghost stories to tell you.
You know that's my favorite part.
I know. And kind of the whole point. So when Colonel Eldridge rebuilt the hotel for the second time, they pretty much used all new material except for a cornerstone from the previous hotel. And this cornerstone is located behind the wall in the current hotel's room 506. And it is believed that because of this cornerstone, room 506 is often visited by Colonel Eldridge himself, as well as a bunch of other spirits. Many of the stories that I read about talk about how it is believed that this cornerstone is actually creating a portal for ghosts to come in and out of the hotel. And I'm not really sure where the logic behind the idea of a portal is coming from. It seems like there was enough bad stuff that happened on that property that they don't need a portal. But alas, portal.
Well, I think sometimes different mediums, ghost hunters, different people involved in the field use terms that might combat each other. So I think sometimes people say portal when they mean really it's just a draw for spirits.
Oh, yep. Yep, yep, yep.
So I wonder if maybe that's where it is. It's not necessarily like a portal to another dimension or something, but it might be a place that spirits are drawn to. That would be my theory in my head anyway.
No. That makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Multiple guests have reported that in room 506, the bathroom door opens and closes on its own. They report hearing disembodied voices, seeing breath marks on newly cleaned mirrors, which is new. I haven't heard of that one before. Lights turning on and off on their own and feeling a presence in the room. In a National Geographic article called A Room with a Boo, they quoted the room division manager, Ryan Kerr, as saying, "One guest came down one morning asking if anyone could have gotten into her room during the night when she was sleeping. We told her, no, no way. And when we asked why, she said that she felt like someone was in there and that she could hear the floor creaking a lot." Well, according to Ryan Kerr, it's impossible for the floor to creak because they're made completely out of concrete. Both staff as well as guests have reported seeing Colonel Eldridge's apparition in the room and have experienced him opening up water bottles in the middle of the night, like taking a plastic water bottle and cracking the seal of the cap on it. Apparently that happens a lot in this room. I guess in case people are thirsty, he's being super hospitable, as well as turning on the air conditioner if it seems like it might be getting a little too warm in there.
This ghost is just warm and dehydrated.
Yeah. Turn it down. Open it up. Another instance of strange happenings in room 506 occurred when a housekeeper went to clean the room but found out that she was not able to get the door open. Her card wouldn't work, and after confirming that no one was checked into the room and having several other people try their own key cards to no avail, the staff was forced to remove the door from its hinges. Afterwards, it was discovered that no one was in the room, but also that the deadbolt had been locked from the inside. Because it's a hotel.
Like the hotel, the hotel flippy one.
No, like some hotels have an actual deadbolt, but you can't, there is no lock on the outside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so key card, that lock mechanism didn't work, or it did work, but they still couldn't get the door open. It's because the manual deadbolt was locked.
Got it.
In addition to room 506, Colonel Eldridge's presence is potentially known in connection to another location in the hotel, or more specifically, an object. A chair that was once owned by Colonel Eldridge can be found in a storage room in the basement of the hotel, and despite not being a super clean location with which the chair resides, the chair itself never seems to get dusty. It's always clean and dust-free, and according to LJWorld.com, quote, "The room is filled with cobwebs and dust, though the chair remains unsoiled. It's always spotless." Once, a bellman snuck into the room to get a look at the chair and caught a glimpse of an elderly man sitting in the chair with a pipe. Apparently, the elderly man looked up and said, "Hmm." And then the bellman screamed and ran away. That was a quote that he went, "Hmm." In the 1970s, a publicity photo was taken of the lobby area of the hotel, which was meant for, I don't know, like magazines or brochures or whatever. And in the photo, you can see a man and a woman just sitting. And behind them, an elevator in the background is just open. And in the elevator, though, there is a faint outline of a human being. And it is thought that this photo is proof of the existence of a presence in the elevator, and so much so that it's actually framed and sitting at the front desk. I have that photo for you tonight.
Yes!
All right, so this is the photo.
Whoa. Are we talking about the thing in the elevator?
Yeah.
Because I was immediately just out of habit looking at the people, because that's where your eyes go to first.
But... yeah. Yeah, they're just models essentially there to look pretty for this thing to be like, people come to our hotel. But, hold on.
That's something.
It's something for sure. Yeah.
It's not the most clear apparition we've seen photo evidence of, but it's definitely not normal.
Right. The elevators at the Eldridge Hotel seem to have a habit of running themselves. They will open and close on their own, sometimes 2 to 3 times in a row. Though curiously, when they do indeed move on their own, they only seem to want to go to the 5th floor, which obviously is where room 506 is, but also not always where the living person in the elevator wants to go. So whatever seems to be in the elevator, if you walk in, you push, "I'm on room 3, it will just sometime bring you up to the 5th floor for no other reason, but only that floor. It never brings you to the incorrect floor on any other level. Only the 5th floor.
Okay.
But also, in general, the 5th floor seems to be pretty haunted, and not just by Colonel Eldridge, and probably the result of that portal that I talked about earlier. Both guests as well as staff have reported seeing apparitions just kind of like meandering down the halls, and guests will report their luggage shaking, which I'm not 100% sure what that means. But a couple different places said that it, you'll have your luggage and it'll just be like shook.
Oh, okay.
Like an old fashioned TSA, like what's in here? people will also report having their covers pulled slowly down while they're trying to sleep. Hate that. And it is not unusual to accidentally come across a group of female spirits sitting around playing poker.
Hell yeah.
Which is amazing.
High stakes.
There is allegedly a shadow person who can be found in the downstairs bar. Apparently, they like to just hang out at the end of the bar and watch people. Not creepy at all. There's also a female spirit who enjoys attending events. She is often seen in the ballroom looking like a real living person until she walks across the room and then suddenly disappears. Throughout the hotel, people will report lights flickering on their own, feeling cold spots, and the candles in the lobby will apparently light themselves. The Eldridge Hotel was featured in the first episode of season 3 of Biographies Channel series My Ghost Story, though apparently Zach has not been there. Or if he has, they certainly don't advertise it, which, fair.
Fair.
But don't take my word on whether or not the Eldridge is haunted. You can go on a ghost tour of Lawrence and hear or maybe see for yourself. GhostToursOfKansas.org will be conducting its 2021 Lawrence Ghost Tour on Saturday, October 23rd and Friday, October 29th. So check it out. But if you do, you have to report back to us. And that is my story of the Eldridge Hotel in Lawrence, Kansas.
I know that hauntings are creepy. People don't want them. But this ghost, or ghosts, plural, mm-hmm. just sounds like people are really helpful.
Yes.
They're keeping the chair clean.
They're cracking
open water bottles, which, though, I would like to point out that for any ghosts, Miss Alice or whoever might be around me, do not crack open hotel water bottles for me, because some of those are
expensive.
Not free. And they are like a $10 bottle of water.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
I'll drink tap water if I need to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very fortunate that I live in Duluth where our tap water is fucking bomb, but
spectacular.
Still, just don't assume that I need a bottle of water.
Right.
But yeah, keeping the rooms cool, lighting candles.
Yeah. You know, those candles are
probably hard
to get
to. Your events look more popular by attending.
I would feel now insulted if I had an event in the ballroom and this lady did not show up. Like,
right.
Was it not good enough? I'm sorry.
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
This place sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's places we talk about where I'm like, yeah, and no, this is a yeah. I'm going to give this one a yeah.
Everything that I read said that all of the ghosts seem to be super hip, super chill, you know, which is great because the beginning of the story was rough.
Exactly.
A lot of racism. A lot of burning stuff down. But it seems
Lots
to be doing
shitty,
pretty
shitty
okay.
Shitty people.
Yep, yep, yep.
So on a skeptic scale, I'm going to give this one a 3.5.
Nice. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Add it to another list of places that we might want to visit, though I'm not going to lie. I don't really know of anything else in Kansas. So if we've been talking for a very long time about places we want to visit, still pandemic time. We started this thing during the pandemic. Like, visits haven't happened yet, but I feel like we would need a few other Kansas locations. So that should probably be on our homework, because I don't know that I want to visit Kansas for just one hotel.
We had one other place in Kansas, though.
Oh, I know we did. I'm just saying we would have to
add additional
for all
things.
The other places we've talked about wanting to visit, we would have to have a few more locations to make this a
for
valid
sure.
visit, you know.
For sure. By the end of this, when we can travel, I think we're both just going to have to take off like a whole month and then grab
those
boys. Yeah,
that'll never fly with my job, and it will not fly with your job either.
No.
We just need to get so popular, so greatly popular, that we can be one of those podcasters who makes it our career, even though statistically that is extremely unlikely.
It's so true. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
I have a Reddit story for you that I found pretty interesting in my research.
Doesn't have anything to do with supernatural.
No, but it does have to be with being on the road.
Oh, so, yeah. We're going to lump this all together. This is our supernatural episode.
Yep. The road so far.
Carry on, my wayward son.
This came up in an Ask Reddit thread.
Okay.
The subject being, long-haul truckers, what's the creepiest / most paranormal thing you've seen on the road?
Awesome.
This was posted 3 years ago, and a Reddit user named The-Gargoyle, cool name, I love a Reddit user with a cool name, said, okay, so here's a spooky for you, and to this day, I still have no idea what the fuck. So I was in the Virginia, Maryland area, and had a lot of work-related sites ranging from downtown Baltimore to Virginia Beach and all around. Friday wrapped up, and I hit the road to some social arrangements I had made for the weekend. Spent the weekend with some friends out in various parts of Virginia, got dragged off to other places even further out, usual weekend fun times. It's late Sunday night when I have to leave. or I'm not going to be able to make it home to get started on Monday. I'm fully rested, I don't do any drinking, and I'm not into drugs. On the highway at about 3 a.m., in the middle of bumfuck nowhere between Roanoke and D.C., absolutely nobody around. I'm cruising along in the left lane simply because there was no one else around. No headlights for the past hour, no taillights either, no road lamps. It's dark, it's mildly damp, it's foggy, I have the music up, I'm feeling good, all is fine. Dude, the gargoyle you're describing, like, one of my favorite times and ways to drive.
100%, yeah.
And then I just happen to look to the left, and there's a fucking dog barking at me.
Huh?
A German Shepherd in a car passenger seat, somewhat blue glow from the instruments inside the car, and it's got its face to its window, and it's barking its head off at me. I get a hard look at it, too, because at first my brain is not registering, cop car, dummy.
Oh, right.
I'm doing 90 plus in a 75.
I've done
that. Promptly have the oh shit moment when the dog, the instruments, and the white crown Vic slash light ball all click into my brain after a second hard look. I put my foot on the brakes and start slowing down, hard but safe, to pull over.
Mm-hmm.
I even put my blinker on to start shifting lanes over to the right lane to pull over because there's no shoulder on the left side of the road. I look back to my left where there's still no shoulder or room for another car, and it's just gone. No trace. No car.
Huh.
I slammed my brakes and stopped in the middle of the fucking highway, flipped on all my lights, and even looked around with my handheld spotlight. There was nothing. No taillights, no headlights, no engine sounds, nothing. There are no tire marks in the damp but mine, and I can see for a nice long distance both ways, nothing. My vehicle has great visibility and a lot of extra lighting. It's an off-road SUV with all the trimmings. There's no possible way somebody pulled a sneaky, let alone drove that fast on wet slopped grass and rocks to the left side. So, yep, there you have it. Ghost cop and his dog didn't like me speeding, apparently.
Ghost dog.
So I had to read this one a few times in case people didn't catch this. Basically, what he's saying is he was driving down the road in the middle of the night in his SUV, mm-hmm. trying to get home before he had to start work again on Monday. And on his side, a cop car pulled up with a dog in the window, a German Shepherd barking at him, going mad. He thought he was speeding and was going to get pulled over.
Yeah.
And so he slowed down. And when he finally stopped and slowed down, the car was gone. So basically, this police dog slash police car. So it's another haunted car story. That was my tie-in. This police dog and police car was trying to slow him down because he was speeding
right.
like a demon.
Like a demon. Wow.
I've seen people say, I mean, there is the idea that if you're tired, you could be hallucinating. Like maybe
not
he had
that.
A bit of that highway hypnosis.
No.
But that sounds pretty intense to me to be highway hypnosis. I've definitely like daydreamed and thought I saw like people on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Like especially when I'm listening to my spooky podcast. But
yeah.
It sounded like this dude was like awake and alert.
Also, you do not just like, what is the word I'm looking for? Where you see it and it's not actually there.
Hallucinate?
Yes, we just covered this. yeah, but also like you do not like hallucinate an entire car and like an interaction with that car. Mm-hmm. Like you could see something out of the corner of your eye. I also see the people thing on the side of the road thing. And I'm always like, am I just sleepy or am I seeing ghosts? but like that's a whole interaction that he had with that police car to the point where he pulled over. Like that's not a normal highway hallucination.
Right.
That's absurd.
Right. We love sharing Reddit stories that we found that are interesting and discussing them and their logistics and was he hallucinating or was it actually a ghost dog?
Ghost
slash
dog.
Ghost car. But you know what we love more than that?
Hearing it from you.
Yeah, we love listener stories. If you have a spooky experience, if you have a story to tell of a friend's spooky experience, anything you want to share with us, questions, comments, we would love to hear them. And you can send them in by emailing us directly, leftofskeptic@gmail.com, or visiting our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and clicking the listener stories tab.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to remain anonymous if you'd like or include your name. It's up to you. We just ask that you please include your pronouns.
Yes, please. You can also find us on social media. We are at Left of Skeptic on Instagram and Twitter, as well as Left of Skeptic Podcast on Facebook.
We have a very exciting next few weeks coming up. Next week will be October.
Spooky season.
Spooky season. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and we are celebrating by bringing you an urban legend series.
Yes. Yes. This is our first, like, themed grouping of shows.
I know. I'm pretty stoked about it. And it's going to start off with a pretty badass setup, so you will not want to miss next week. Also, keep an ear out for, or I guess eyes out, because we'll post it on social media, for any updates we get about the upcoming DeLucon, how you can buy tickets, and what the plan is for
us,
if you're a Duluth resident, to come see us.
See us.
Yay.
See
us. Yay. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us again this spooky Wednesday.
We love you all dearly.
Yes, we do. Okay. Bye.
Bye.